Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
What is this, amateur hour?
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour is the best podcast in the world. Yeah. Amateur hour is the best podcast in the world. Come on. Uh-huh. This is a show about the Chiefs, the football team that plays in Kansas City. Friendship and fun and stats that you won't believe. AHPKC will begin shortly. Hey, hey. Hey, Dirk. Are you ready? Let's do this thing. Come on, let's go. Let's go. It's football time. Yeah. Yeah. It's Amateur Hour, folks. Welcome in to Amateur Hour. I am Ryan Scott Hall, and my co-host this week is a changed man, a brand new man, after capturing a long-distance selfie with the one and only Rasheed Wallace. His Darkness.
Sheep. What's up?
How you doing there, Dick? You feel like a brand new man?
I'm doing good. Oh, a little bit. Still in the same old Chiefs onesie over here.
Yeah.
Haven't changed.
Okay.
Been wearing it for about 13 days straight, I think.
All right.
Society is starting to approve it, starting to approve of my fashion choices. And the Chiefs are in the AFC Championship, so things are good.
I was going to say, I feel like a new man because the curse is officially broken. Other teams can miss kicks at Arrowhead in the playoffs. The Chiefs can win at home. The Chiefs can beat the Colts. And the Chiefs are hosting the AFC Championship at Arrowhead Stadium against Tom Brady and the Patriots. I hate them.
Yeah, it does feel like the curse is officially broken. Yeah, that was kind of a topic we discussed. Was beating the Colts enough? I think if a simple sampling of Chiefs fans right now would show you, I would say their playoff anxiety is gone. Just a quick survey of Chiefs fans. Most feeling pretty confident going into this game. But I think all that anxiety, that negativity, the 30 years of everything officially broken. There's just no more little subtle jabs you can throw. Oh, it was only Brian Hoyer that didn't count. Oh, they still haven't won at home. So they haven't done that. I mean, it's put all those to bed. We're just a regular football team now that can, you know, win things. It's amazing.
I mean, I agree with you, except for the very last part. We are not a regular football team because we are captained and led by Patrick Mahomes, and there is nothing normal about a 23-year-old MVP. All right? Feeling pretty good about it, folks, especially considering the fact that the Chiefs absolutely dominated the Indianapolis Colts, and one of, I think, everybody's favorite stats in that game, Pat Mahomes didn't even throw a touchdown.
Don't need to.
Didn't even.
He don't need it. He's above that.
Didn't even.
That's,
need
that's
to.
Regular season stuff. Regular season playoffs, whole different animal. You know, I'm gonna run one in, get you a few more fantasy points. I'm gonna do it the hard way. That's how he's doing it.
So, I think that like what turned out to be a really good way to maybe like distill the fact that the curse was broken was a tweet that actually kind of made me pretty emotional, to be honest. Like after the game, I was just kind of hanging out with my girlfriend and like kind of just reviewing things on Twitter and seeing what people were saying. And all of a sudden, our old friend Nick Wright comes through and says, I've got a ton of friends in Kansas City and I'm happy for all of them. But at the top of the list are my boys, His Darkness and Ryan Scott Hall, the definition of diehard fans covering the team with AHPKC and have lived through all the misery. Enjoy it, fellas. And I wanted to take a quick moment to review the replies on this tweet and have what I would like to call today a block party, because there are some responses in here that are so ridiculous that, folks, it's getting you blocked. It's getting you blocked. Are you ready, Dirk? I'm sitting here on the Twitter, and I'm blocking people. Dr. Mario Pepper, sorry, no fans deserve it more than others. That's just selfish. Plus, they're not that great, to be honest. You guys must have went to high school together or something. Get over yourselves. At Dr. Mario Pepper, you fucking blocked. You blocked. Get out of here. I'm not taking any negativity today.
No. That guy used to live in my mentions. I don't. He apparently is not a fan of us anymore. But you guys must have been to high school together. Like, that's the only way you guys could be friends, mm-hmm. is if you guys went to high school. Otherwise, you're not legitimate friends. That shouldn't count. And they don't deserve it more than us. Come on.
How about at Adam Connolly? Imagine being this excited over a home divisional round playoff win. You blocked, Adam. You don't know anything about the pain that we've gone through. You don't know anything about the suffering of Chiefs fans. How about CM Jobber with a screenshot about the Cavs? You blocked. You blocked, CM Jobber. You gone. I don't care, because nobody is going to get me down after breaking the curse. I'm getting rid of all the negativity. All of it. Afentra replied, hey, that's really nice. Yeah, you could stay. You could stay, Afentra.
Blocked. Get her out.
Oh, man. I kind of want to block this guy that starts talking about how he's been a fan since, like, 1960 or whatever, but I really – nah. It's okay. You can stay. You can stay. Travis Richardson, enjoy what? You act like they won it all. They still got a ways to go. Shut up, Travis. You're blocked. You are blocked. I bet not bigger fans than me, but whatever, go Chiefs. Well, we're bigger fans than you, man. I'm sorry. We are bigger fans than you, JB Gade. You blocked. This is my block party, and I'll cry if I want to. I'm having a great time. All right, we can stop blocking people, but thanks, Nick. I know that you're totally listening in preparation for your national television broadcast. And man, you know, I got to be honest. I really don't care what anybody says. They might want to think that we're Nick Wright lackeys or whatever. I am so proud to consider myself a friend of Nick Wright, who is probably the biggest personality in Chiefs, or I guess Kansas City sports radio history. The man is like 35 years old, and he is absolutely crushing it. And, you know, thanks to us. You're welcome, Nick.
Yeah, no, I mean, not to mention we helped launch his career among the many others. So, you know, most of the thanks to us. And also, I think we might be able to track Nicky down if we pull off another victory this week. We've got a whole 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. I think Nick might be able to find the time, might be able to squeeze us in between his national TV show and his national radio show. Might have a little time for us amateurs over here in Kansas City.
Yeah, man. I mean, it would be pretty hard to imagine not being able to celebrate the Chiefs going to the Super Bowl by talking to Nick Wright. The guy has just been an absolute staple for us, and I love him. I love you, Nick. And so I was trying to figure out, like, what to do today. And I think that maybe the best place to start, because it was kind of a dramatic thing leading up to the game a little bit, was my status. And I guess your status as well, as far as, like, what's going to happen. Is Ryan going to have to work? How's he doing? Is he going to be able to go to the game? What's Dirk going to wear? How are the Chiefs going to pull this game off? And what impact, if any, is Amateur Hour going to have? Well, guys, here's the deal. I told everyone on Twitter that I got sick And so I wasn't able to work. And fortunately that my job was not going to be in jeopardy, but that I would have full transparency on my medical report come this week's show. And that is in many ways a subtle jab at the Chiefs. I was day to day for a few days there, but I am happy to report that I am comfortably sitting on my couch right now. And I was incapable of doing that for a few days there. So here's what happened. If you have kids in the car, you may want to tell them to put earmuffs on. Guys, we've been through a lot together. We've been doing this show. This is season 7 of Amateur Hour. And so I don't have any secrets. So I'm going to tell you what my week was like leading up to the AFC Championship, as I was what I thought to be dealing with a hemorrhoid. A hemorrhoid, for those of you at home that don't know, is it's like a blood vessel in your butthole that fills up, it gets all clogged, and it's extremely uncomfortable. Well, Ryan was quite literally unable to sit down, unable to lay down, unable to stand, unable to walk. I was completely immobilized and in the most pain I have ever been in physically in my entire life. Well, yesterday I went to the doctor, and the doctor tells me that they believe I had a pilonidal cyst. Are you ready for this? A pilonidal cyst is a fluid-filled sac. It forms beneath the skin near your tailbone at the top of the crease of your buttocks. listen, this is what happened. Basically, I got like a gigantic thing in my rectum on the outside, and it got so big and so uncomfortable that like I was crying like 6 or 7 times a day. I couldn't do anything. It was absolutely excruciating. And Saturday, when I wasn't supposed to be at work yet, but like around noon on game day, I went and took an Epsom salt bath. It's supposed to like relieve the pain and whatever. And I get out of the bath, and my at the time presumed hemorrhoid, but turns out it is apparently a pilonidal cyst. It exploded. It was fucking gross. It was the most disgusting thing that you can ever imagine. And all I want you to know is that as soon as that thing like subsided, as soon as it went away, I went from like Mr. Burns, like huddled over and like decrepit and having like it couldn't even stand up straight, to like Duffman. I was a brand new person prior to kickoff. The football gods were on our side, and I was able to sit comfortably and watch the game. That has been the saga of my butthole.
Your condition sounds kind of like what the Chiefs did to the Colts, if I'm not mistaken. We kind of put a big fluid-filled sack in their rectums, and then Arrowhead exploded all over that, and it was a sea of joy in this rectum fluid sack all over us. It was fantastic. It was all over the field. It was all over our bodies. What a time to be at Arrowhead. So you may have been in the most pain of your life. I may have been in the most joy of my life with the Santos taking me onto the field. I was like a child. There was one simple rule for me to follow. Hey, Dirk, you can't yell at the players. Well, folks, I'm on the field at Arrowhead Stadium. I have had probably I hadn't overdone it at this point. I was feeling really good. I would say, you know, the beginning of peak drunkenness. You know, there's just like an hour or two usually where you're just having the best time of your life. And then, you know, the time leading up to it's cool, whatever. The time after it's kind of sucky, but whatever. There's a peak drunkenness in there. Getting onto the field was that peak drunkenness. I had a real tough time not yelling at players. I mean, it's a Chiefs playoff game and they're running by, and I am so fired up. Like it slipped out probably 7 or 8 times. I was going to get kicked out if I wasn't standing next to very important people. And by that, I mean Rasheed Wallace and Dante Hall. Rasheed Wallace, the first thing I see, I walk down the stairs, it's like, holy shit, here's Arrowhead Stadium. Playoff game's about an hour away. There's Rasheed fucking Wallace, a 7-foot tall Chiefs fan with these sunglasses on. Like, oh my God, this is going to be the coolest selfie I ever get. Hey, Rasheed. Hey, can we take a picture real quick? Nah, man. Nah. Like, oh. Oh, he's not joking. Okay. All right, cool. Well, I'll just take my ass over here, waited a few minutes, and then just kind of, you know, held in a position where I had him in the frame and me in the frame, and then just waited for him to turn around, and boom, click. One of the favorite photos I've ever been a part of, me and Rasheed Wallace on the field. Not to mention, I eventually got taken over Clark Hunt, shook his hand. I saw Patrick Mahomes Sr. out of the corner of my eye, just sitting there looking like the coolest guy. I went up to him. I told him I loved his son. I told him he was dad of the year. And I talked to some of the refs. I talked to the lead ref in the game. I talked to one of the side judges. I explained to them how we were the good guys today, how, you know, anything that's going on out there, just remember, you know, we are Chiefs fans. We love the Chiefs. We're the good guys today. Just wanted to put good vibes in their minds. I think it did pay off. But just a fantastic time. We had a great time tailgating in the snow. One of the cooler tailgates you'll ever see. Great time before the game. And then great time during the game, courtesy of the Chiefs. So just a magical game on Saturday. One that I will never forget. I even had a chance to get rowdy. I got rowdy at a game. Hadn't got rowdy at a game probably all year. You know, I was kind of complaining earlier in the year about how none of the home games were even close. I didn't even get a chance to get rowdy. I had a Chiefs fan turn around and call me an asshole. A Chiefs fan called me an asshole. It was because the Colts had a sack late in the fourth quarter. They were down 3 scores. They were dancing. I think anybody who's watched football with me knows how I get when you're dancing down 3 scores in a game. Not a fan of it. So I let the Colts fans around me know it a little bit. But I mean, everything's playful for me. There's no threat of fighting ever whatsoever with me. It's not a fighting bone in my DNA. I have no interest in fighting, just verbally sparring. And even the Colts fans around me were having a good time. They talked to them about how they wanted us to beat the Patriots and all this. But just a fantastic time, just party time out at Arrowhead. Great day. Great day.
It was a really great day. And like, I thought honestly that we could literally just spend like 30 minutes reviewing things on Twitter. There's so many good tweets and so many good stats that came out through Twitter. But you know, you could just go check out at AHPKC or at Ryan Scott Hall or at His Dirkness or at, you know, Therese Paylor or at Mellinger or at a million of other people. Just get on the tweet machine and go through and review Saturday and Sunday, and you're going to have a lot of fun. I think a couple things that ultimately ended up really standing out to me about the game, obviously the defensive performance, which was completely unexpected. I think it really caught a lot of people by surprise. I think that, like, my favorite stat was that they go 0-for-9 on third down. And they were the number one team in third down offense percentage-wise, as we covered on the show last week. And I think, reported by His Dirkness, the Colts had negative yardage for the game on third down. Is that correct?
Mostly correct there. That would be Craig Stout with the stat there. But yes, negative yardage for the number one third down team, 0-of-9 on the day. That's pretty much the story of the game right there. Just an ass-kicking.
I also really loved that, I mean, at least until like late in the game, I know at one point earlier in the fourth quarter, the Colts had less than 100 yards of net passing. Net passing means passing yards minus the yards that you lose when you get sacked. They finished the game with 266 total yards. I mean, that is an absolute ass whooping from Bob Sutton's defense. And another one of the stats I think that really kind of blew me away was that Andrew Luck dropped back to pass 41 times and some stat service, maybe it's Pro Football Focus or whatever. They had the Chiefs credited with 20 quarterback pressures out of the 41 dropbacks. It was so bad that the Colts' top-rated offensive line that everyone was talking about all week long fired their offensive line coach after the game. He is no longer their coach. The Colts are searching for a new offensive line coach after being considered arguably the best offensive line in the NFL all season long.
Yeah, and that's something we discussed last week. I mean, that was a strength versus strength matchup. Number one team in sacks with the Chiefs, possibly number one best offensive line in the league with the Colts. That was a matchup the Colts had to win. They did not win that matchup. How about another fun stat from the game? The Colts punted 7 times. Suck it, no punt game. Suck it. 7 punts.
It's pretty beautiful. I also loved, if you want to look on the other side of the ball, my guy, Damian Williams, 30 touches for over 150 yards, had an absolutely dynamic touchdown run. I mean, Damian Williams was just an absolute star. I think the thing that really blew me away was that I heard all this talk leading up to the game, and primarily a lot of it was coming from Bill Simmons. We mentioned this on the show last week that he was talking about how when you get like a third or fourth string running back in a pressure situation like this, that they're trying to do too much, and that's when it leads to potential issues with coughing the ball up. And the Chiefs showed no hesitation in feeding him the ball late in the game. They ended up bringing in Darrell Williams for that last touchdown run too, an undrafted rookie free agent who probably has 50 carries on the season. And just the confidence that they showed in these running backs and the way that both of them showed up, but obviously primarily Damian Williams kind of leading the way. I mean, look, I know that when you look at on paper what Kareem Hunt did so fast and so effectively in his career that it's hard to try to compare him to a guy like Damian Williams. But this is a guy that has earned himself a contract extension that frankly never really got a fair crack at being a starting running back. And I am blown away by how well he's played and really excited to see what he can do next season with a full complement of carries as a starting running back in the NFL. I thought he showed out extremely well against Indianapolis.
Yeah, and he was fantastic. He kind of shut me up with my concerns over short yardage situations. So quick shout out to Andy Reid as well here, because a big topic that we discussed last week was Andy Reid. What would he do on fourth downs? Well, he went 3 for 4 on fourth downs in a game where you're up 14-0 in pretty much no time. So you can't ask for too much more aggression from that. We had a 4th and 1. Easy 11 yards straight up the gut from Damian Williams. We had a 4th and 1. Easy 4 yards straight up the gut from Damian Williams. 4th and 1 later on. I think, I don't even know if Damian or Darrell touched that one, but that was a hard-earned yard, but still picked up. So 3 for 3 in 4th and 1 situations. We actually, 4th and 5 is when we turned it over, took a sack there. But, man, Damian Williams, you can't ask for much more than that. I mean, in that first touchdown run, 2 defenders right in his way and just jukes straight by both of them. I mean, and a few other just nifty runs like that. Damian Williams was very, very good. I don't know, like comparing him to Kareem Hunt over the course of an entire season, I don't know if he matches his production, but one thing's for sure, Damian Williams is fresh right now, and that might be the most important thing when it comes to a running back. And right now he's all we need. I think the running game concerns are just out the window, and Damian Williams played fantastic.
Yeah. The fourth downs. I mean, I was in this place of, you can't trust this defense. I still feel that way for the record. I want Andy Reid to remain very aggressive on offense. And I'm hoping that even after what have been like, really lights out performances for 2 straight weeks now, that Andy still looks at the whole picture this season and says, I know I can count on myself and I know I can count on the offense and Patrick Mahomes. And I don't know. It's been such a mixed bag from the defense. And most of the time, a pretty bitter taste in your mouth based on the way that the defense has played. And I thought that Andy came out. I mean, listen, I'm going to tell you that he did what I asked him to do because it makes it sound good for me. I don't know if this is actually the way that he approached it, but I thought that they came out and did that opening script, the first 15, in the way that I asked him to, basically planning it out as if Alex Smith was the one that was going to be taking snaps. Mahomes on that first drive, he starts 3 of 3, and he didn't throw the ball further than about 10 yards down the field. I thought that they actually looked pretty conservative offensively to start the game. Mahomes started hot, and it really helped the team and carry them forward. Now, just because some of the play calls themselves were conservative, that doesn't mean that Andy Reid himself ended up being conservative like as a whole, because he was. He was aggressive on fourth down. And I think that that got the crowd into it. I think that it really pumped some confidence into the offense, and it may have even put some confidence into the defense, even though it's not like it shouldn't be taken as like a shot at them. It should just be like, you know, we came to play today, and, you know, the offense wasn't going to lay down on a 4th and 1 or something. Like, no, we're going to set the tone today and we're going to be the aggressor. And I mean, it ended up helping out both the offense and the defense, because I think it just got everybody fired up.
And really just no hesitation from it all. It wasn't like he was waffling on the sideline. He didn't waste a timeout thinking about it. He's just 4th and 1, like, we're doing this. And you kind of look at it. So the first 4th and 1, it's already 7-0. This is the second drive. It's at the 47-yard line. I mean, that's a situation where, I mean, I think most fans would be like, you got to go for it. But a lot of NFL coaches, they're going to punt there. So if he punts there, then the next drive, he gets another 4th and 1 on their 35. Say he kicks a field goal there and say it's no good. So say he punts on that first 4th down, they miss a field goal on that second 4th and 1. Instead of a 17-0 lead, which we had and put us at, you know, comfortable for the rest of the game, and we can just work on this, it could have been 7-0 if he's not aggressive on those 4th down. So I mean, it's just, that's the kind of difference you see if you're aggressive and you come through, and that's 17-0, that's what you want. We talked about the Chiefs getting up in this game, and could the Colts stay patient enough? And did they have enough offensive weapons to you know, go punch for punch at that point, down 17-0? And they definitely did not. So it's just that was everything. Those 4th and 1 decisions were just everything in that game.
Dirk, is there anything else specifically from the Colts game that you want to get to today? Because I think a lot of people are thinking about and looking forward to the New England Patriots.
Yeah,
we had to win that game against the Colts, and I think that there's a lot of people that are probably ready to just move forward and let's go.
Oh yeah, we're on the swing day here, Wednesday. Real quick on those 4th and 1s, the final point that I didn't make: the Colts punted on a 4th and 1. Granted, it's at their own 34-yard line, but they're down 17-0 in this type of game with the Chiefs' offense on the other side. Like, you can't punt on 4th and 1 anywhere in the field. And it's just, that was kind of the difference between the two teams. A few things. The Mahomes injury, which I was totally oblivious to out at the game. You don't get any replays or anything. Man, watching the replay of the game, that was terrifying. Like you see the play happen, and you're like, oh shit, did his knee get twisted up a little bit there? And then he throws like an errant pass, and then they show him limping to the sideline, and it's just like, oh my God, I would have been shitting my pants if I was sitting there watching that at home. Out at the game, totally oblivious to it. I saw a tweet, someone tweeted me, but it's so cold, you're not checking Twitter very much. I saw like 10 minutes later, like, they were working on Mahomes' knee. I was like, what the fuck? So that was really scary and something that was just, you didn't really expect to see. I think that's all I got. Just the drive after the blocked punt was kind of the time where it's like, okay, are we doing this again? Like, is this happening again? And that drive after it, just to immediately answer, put 7 on the board once again, just kind of put everything to bed. It was just like, you're waiting for that weird play to happen. And that's kind of like going back to that Mariota throwing a touchdown on himself. Nobody thinks we're losing that game. And then you see that weird play and it's like, holy shit, here it comes. We got to stop it. The Chiefs put a stop to it in no time whatsoever. Just immediately answered, a absolutely huge drive. The first play of that drive was like the the play you've kind of seen, probably seen replays of, with this crazy motion going back and forth, and the Colts linebackers have no idea what's going on, and it's Travis Kelce for 30 yards. Just an immediate answer on that play, that drive, and that was the difference. That was the biggest drive of the game, and just put everybody at ease for the rest of the game, and we cruised to victory.
I'll tell you this. Like, I think that as we transition from the Colts to the Patriots, it's important for people to remember that you mentioned, you know, the Colts not going for it on a fourth and one when they're down 17 to nothing. I tweeted at one point late in the fourth quarter, it's first and 10. I think that the Chiefs were up 24-7. They hadn't scored the final touchdown yet. And it's first and 10 from the Colts, like 25. And Frank Reich is handing the ball off. I'm looking at this thinking, like, dude, that you have given up. Like, you have no intention of trying to go and win this game. And, I mean, I know that leading up to halftime, because the Colts had that drive at the end of the half before Vinatieri missed the field goal, the Colts go no huddle, and they basically end up going right down the field. And everybody on television and on social media are saying, like, the Colts have found what they need to do. They got to go no huddle for the entire second half. And I feel like I heard people talking about this on the radio, maybe in the post game or something. And I don't know if it was Frank Reich or if it was Andrew Luck or what, but the Colts basically said that was our game plan in the second half, but we couldn't get a first down. Like, we intended to go no huddle, but we weren't successful at being able to move the ball. And the big difference, the reason that I bring up New England, the big difference between these two teams is that, like, fourth and one, oh, you know Belichick is going for it. Like, there's a big difference between a guy that is essentially a rookie head coach and is with this team for a short period of time. He knows his personnel because he's been there the entire season. But, like, there's a huge difference between Frank Reich and the Colts and Bill Belichick and the Patriots. You know, the Colts going 0-9, the Colts being willing to punt on fourth and one, they're just terrible situational awareness throughout the game. That is not what this opponent in New England is going to be like. Now, there are a lot of stats that I'm sure we're going to get to today that should give Chiefs fans a tremendous amount of confidence. But this is going to be a completely different matchup, especially in terms of, I think, just like expertise, experience, awareness. It doesn't get better than Belichick in terms of having a team prepared to play. And it's going to be a doozy on Sunday, man. It is going to be a game.
All right. All right. One last thing on Chiefs-Colts, and then I'm switching over. I did a little deep diving really late Saturday night, or no, Friday night, I guess, the night before the game, and was looking at Andrew Luck's, like, history of playing in road games and in cold weather games, because they play on a dome. And the kind of the discussion leading up to it was the cold weather. Does it help the Colts? Because they want to run the ball more than the Chiefs, or does it help the Chiefs because they're used to it and the Colts are a dome team? And I thought it was kind of a worthy debate, and it's really one of the questions that, like, it had a definitive answer, and I just didn't see it until, you know, really late, and that's when I got on it. And Andrew Luck didn't play in a game under 50 degrees since 2014, like, and with his surgically repaired arm or whatever, I thought he was really affected by the cold. And he just had no zip on his balls the whole game. He was just kind of floating everything out there. And I think that was just kind of – it was a worthy discussion leading up to the game, but the answer was definitively on one side that the cold helped the Chiefs. Now, switching over, Chiefs-Patriots. I think a lot of people liked what we did last week, calling out the Colts. I got to be honest, I don't have as much hate for the Patriots as I do for the Colts. I fucking hate the Colts. The Patriots I'm fucking tired of, but I don't have the same amount of hatred. But what I see when I look at the game, and something I don't think a lot of people are even talking about, I haven't seen anybody discuss this, but it's definitely on the table. This could be the last game of Tom Brady's career. This could be the last game of Bill Belichick's career. And the Chiefs have a chance to put the final nail in the coffin of perhaps the greatest dynasty in the history of sports. We're talking 8 Super Bowl appearances. We're talking 5 Super Bowl wins. We're talking 8 straight AFC Championship game appearances. This could be the final game for the Patriots. This could be the end of one era and the beginning of a new era. This is the biggest game in Arrowhead Stadium history. It's the first time that we have hosted the AFC Championship game. And we have people challenging Arrowhead, saying it's not going to be loud because it's cold. It's not going to be loud because it's cold. And we're wearing face masks, and this is going to stop us from being loud. Look, you can call out Arrowhead for a lot of things. I mean, we get drunk and we act like total assholes. That's fine. If you want to criticize us for that, among other things, do whatever. I mean, our tickets are cheap. I don't know if that factors into how good fans are, but we don't pay too much for tickets. I think it helps the fan base, actually, because we get some of the real folk out there that like to scream. The one thing you cannot question about Arrowhead Stadium is that it's going to be loud. It is going to be loud. And we got these fucks, Colin Coward and Bill Simmons, saying that Arrowhead Stadium isn't going to be loud because it's cold. They don't know what's coming. They don't know what's coming. Oh, God. I'm fucking pumped for this. Everybody in the country is going to be rooting for us. The fucks in Boston have won so much. Every single sport. They got all these championships. We got fucking Bill Simmons counting up Super Bowl appearances. They don't deserve this. We deserve this. It's our time. It's the end of the Patriots. It's the beginning of the Chiefs. And I'm just ready to go. That's my monologue today. Let's go.
So it's interesting the way that you frame that. I know that I guess a lot of the people that listen to us are probably taking the time to listen to other podcasts. And maybe cardinal of which is Therese and Charles Robinson, the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. And I mean, a lot of this is because Therese Paylor covered the team so well, you know, over the last 6 or 7 years. And as soon as he gets a national gig, you know, you're excited for him. You want to hear what he has to say. He's still based in Kansas City. He still has his finger directly on the pulse of this franchise. And he's a really fantastic columnist. But when he gets into this audio, he comes up with some things on the fly that I don't know if he's been marinating on or if it really is just his creativity being able to come out instead of just being a beat writer. Well, on the Sunday night freestyle show, which basically is like their recap from the NFL weekend, Therese started talking about the Chiefs-Patriots matchup. And one of the comparisons that he made, and this relates basically directly to Patrick Mahomes, he said that he sees this game a lot like Michael Jordan and the Pistons and LeBron James and the Pistons. He's like, I'm going to compare this to the Pistons because the Pistons were a team that was in the way of both Michael Jordan and LeBron James when those guys basically were trying to reach the pinnacle that ultimately they did. And he said that he saw this game for Patrick Mahomes going one of two ways. It was either going to go a lot like Michael Jordan against the Bad Boys Pistons, where he ended up having a lot of lessons that he had to learn, because he was losing these games in the playoffs to the Pistons, and it became what fueled him. And ultimately, like, those stumbling blocks led to them winning 6 championships. He said it's either that or it's going to be like LeBron James playing against the Pistons and having his 26 straight points in a coming out party in front of the entire world. It's going to be one of two things. He's either going to learn like MJ had to and going against the GOAT, and it's going to be Tom Brady's last stand, or this is going to be the coming out party for Patrick Mahomes. And I don't know which one of those it's going to be, but I can tell you, man, LeBron James, when he had his coming out party, that was in Detroit, all right? Doing that on the road. And Mahomes has the advantage of being able to play in front of the best fans in the world, inside of the loudest stadium in the world. And I want to harken back to the thing that I think got me so excited about Patrick Mahomes inside of this season. We are already obviously excited because of all the angst and all the time that we had to wait to get a guy like Mahomes to be the quarterback for this franchise. But man, leading up to that Patriots game, someone asked Patrick Mahomes, you know, what are you looking forward to about playing against Tom Brady? Like, what's the thing that you're thinking about this week? And Mahomes corrected the reporter and said, I'm not playing against Tom Brady. I'm playing against the Patriots defense. And that is something that just, like, it got me so excited. It gave me chills to see that this kid, this 23-year-old kid, recognized that, yeah, the specter of Tom Brady exists. I'm going to be in Foxborough and he's going to be on the other sideline. But when I'm on the field, Tom Brady has nothing to do with the outcome of me playing. And that's the thing that I'm just like, that's I think where I get really confident, because I know that this Patriots defense, not only has he already faced them, but they don't have Tom Brady. All right. This Patriots defense is a collection of, for the most part, not great talent. And I just don't think this is not the Patriots of old. This is not the Patriots defense that has made, you know, 8 straight AFC championship games. And they are a completely different team when they're on the road, as I'm sure his darkness has some stats to back that up.
Well, should back that bad ass up. Yeah, I do. I mean, everyone's seen that stat, but at this point, I mean, the Patriots, second in defensive DVOA at home, 31st on the road. It's kind of crazy. I kind of looked at the stats, last night a little bit, just trying to figure out how that could be such a wide disparity. I mean, that's the biggest disparity I've ever seen in like any sort of split. And I mean, really, it could only be bigger by 2 spots. I mean, we're talking the second best defense in the NFL at home, the second worst defense in the NFL on the road. It seems kind of impossible, but so the stats aren't really that lopsided, which is the crazy thing. They really just played a lot of big-time offenses at home and did a pretty good job, and then like shut down their division foes, and then on the road played a lot of subpar offenses and gave up like a decent amount of points. So it's not really as daunting as you'd think, like trying to find like all these crazy stats about how they differ from home and away. It's really just like all the big offenses they played this year were at home. I do want to say, the reason this game isn't at Foxborough and is at Arrowhead is because of that Dolphins lateral play. We'd be looking at a whole different ball game if the Dolphins hadn't scored that lateral play. Also, if you want to use the Patrick Mahomes 4th-and-9 heave against the Ravens, that miracle hove, that Mahomes magic, that's reason 1B why this game isn't in Foxborough. So just a lot of things that kind of just, you know, kind of kismet, just kind of beautiful, like playing the Patriots on this path, like a lot of things are just lining up to make a really special game, either one way or the other. I love the NBA comparisons, because I was thinking while you were saying it, like if you're comparing this to Michael Jordan and the Pistons, like they had to take their lumps. And I've kind of been in the back of my mind all season, it's kind of been that feeling with this Chiefs team and with Mahomes, like they're going to be there, but it feels like they're going to take their lump kind of season, kind of ending to the season. But, you know, now that we're here, I mean, I got all the confidence in the world. I think we're the better team. And it's just, I feel very confident, even though most of the season I've been thinking like it's going to end either, you know, in the AFC Championship or in the Super Bowl. And it still might, obviously. But once we're here, it just feels like we got a better team than this Patriots team. Like this Patriots team, it might be the worst of those 8 AFC championship teams. Like it's weird to watch them, and we've kind of said it all season, and people kind of giving shit to Tom Brady and everything, like with the, you know, people think we suck and blah blah blah. People did kind of think they sucked. I mean, we kind of said that almost every week, like this Patriots team sucks, at least compared to past Patriots teams. So I kind of got where he was coming from. Obviously, it's been taken pretty damn far, a little too far by Julian Edelman. I want you to settle down there, you little Irish fuck. But you know, I'm just rambling now. We'll see. I'm pumped. Let's go. Let's fucking go.
So there's a couple things to keep in mind here. You mentioned that the Patriots on the road have the 31st ranked DVOA on defense, and that they are the second defense in DVOA at home. This isn't like this. It is a huge disparity, right? I mean, it's about as far apart as you could be, because it's second and second to last instead of first and last, essentially. Like it is a huge discrepancy between home and away for them. But I mean, if you've paid any attention to Chiefs social media, you would see that the Chiefs defense does the exact same thing. I mean, I don't know what the rankings are at home versus on the road, but you can just see like the points per game, and the Chiefs are giving up like 10 fewer points per game, if not more than that, at home versus on the road. They perform a lot better. They're a different team when they're playing at home. And I don't think that that should be unexpected. That, to me, honestly, is like what sports are supposed to be. You're supposed to be better when you play at home and struggle when you're on the road. Now, I think where it really became manifest for me wasn't just in the rankings. It's in the record, man. It's in the results. The Pats, 9 wins at home. They went 3-5. They have a losing road record this year. I mean, like, that's astonishing to me that you have this team that is so good that, like, can't be beat in their home stadium, and they go on the road, and, I mean, they have some pretty ugly losses on the road this year. And, there's a couple things in here that I think the Chiefs need to be able to look at and be confident about. And that maybe this is more of a fan thing than a team thing. But when I look at the Patriots, you know, there were all the polls about who do you want to play? Do you want the Chargers or do you want the Patriots? And, you know, you saw the tweet from What's-His-Nuts, Mike Florio, saying that, like, it was unanimous when I was coming out of Arrowhead that they wanted to play the Chargers. And I saw your reply that was like, well, pretty much every internet poll says the opposite. Yep. I wanted to play the Patriots. And here's the big reason why, and this is where I think that Chiefs fans should be able to gain some confidence. I know that Tom Brady is just different. He's the best quarterback that I think has ever played this game. But the guys that surround Tom Brady, literally each of the other 10 players on his team, they're not that good. They're not that good anymore. And I would say that probably the best player that he has as a weapon on his offense, the most effective or maybe unique player that he has, is James White. When you look at the guys that he has on the outside, all of the players that he's supposed to be throwing to, I think that the collection of weapons that he has is really not that different from the Indianapolis Colts. Now, Tom Brady being able to play more effectively than Andrew Luck, Tom Brady, you know, I would think probably not being pressured on 20 out of 41 dropbacks. You never know. There are some obvious differences here. But I tell you what, every time that you've seen Tom Brady lose in the playoffs, it's basically on the road and it's against teams that go and hit him. It's when he gets rattled. And the Chiefs, like, that's what our defense does. The Chiefs defense is getting to play at home. They play better at home and they pressure the quarterback. We're really not great at many other things. And so if the Chiefs are able to do essentially what they've done, the way that they're built on defense, and I think that you have seen a pattern of success throughout the season that, like, if you can hang your hat on one thing, it's that the Chiefs can rattle the opposing team's quarterback through the pass rush. That's how you beat Tom Brady. That's the formula. And I'm not saying that Brett Veach, like, knew that or that Bob Sutton knew that, and we've just built this defense to try to beat New England. But, I mean, you have the formula. You have the talent to do it. You have everything sitting there in front of you. And, like, I know that, like, so the James White thing, he does scare me because it doesn't look like Dorian O'Daniel is going to play. I know everyone's excited to talk about Eric Berry's health all week. Will he or won't he? Once again, he did practice today, which honestly I was really surprised about. But we don't really have a guy to match up with James White. I think you actually mentioned at dinner on Sunday that this is not an Anthony Hitchens game or a bad Anthony Hitchens game. But I don't think that really any of the receivers, including Julian Edelman, I really don't think that Gronk or any of the other tight ends, like, there's not a lot about the Patriots offense that scares me aside from James White. I don't know how you feel about that, Dirk, but that's where I'm at.
No, and I mean, that's why we've said the Patriots have sucked all season, because you look at this talent around Tom Brady and it's just, you know, what do they got? I mean, they used to have Gronkowski, and Gronkowski is all the way done, it seems like. He's Jason Dunkowski now is what I'm calling him, because we got people just pointing out how good of a blocker he was last week. Like, well, congrats, you've fallen from the best tight end of all time to, you know, a great blocker. Congrats. But you look, I mean, obviously the receiving talent, we kind of thought Edelman was down. He had a big game last week, so he's maybe rounding back into form at this point. The receiving talent on the outside is just non-existent. And that's really the weakness of this team. But this is what makes the Patriots great, is because they are able to adapt and turn a team with that kind of talent and still produce. I mean, they ran up and down the field on a top 10 defense in the Chargers last week and just did whatever they want. They just toyed with them. And, you know, so what makes them great is their ability to adapt. Like, they're the only team in the NFL who I think whose game plan going into a game could be to run it 40 times, like we've seen them do against the Colts before, or like the Bills earlier this season, or they can come out and throw the ball 25 straight times, which we saw them do against this Chiefs team in the playoffs. So, I mean, it's just their ability to adjust to where the talent is on their team is what makes them so great over the years. Okay, so what do they have against this Chiefs team? What do they want to do? I think what the Patriots want to do is run the ball 40 times. I think when Tom Brady drops back the pass, if he sees a soft zone, he wants to jump. He wants to jump, drop the ball off to James White. If he sees man coverage, I think they want to run some outs and some crossers and some pick plays, particularly to Julian Edelman. And really, I think that's all they got. And unfortunately, that's kind of been enough for them. At least it was enough last week, because the Chargers, I've watched a lot of Patriots this year. They're going to come out and dump the ball down to James White. And if you don't stop it, they're going to do it over and over and over again, because it's the easiest 8 yards in football. Okay, you got to find a way to take that away. Now, the one thing that kind of scares me the most, I think their path to victory, and I've kind of been saying this in a few shows now, is to run the ball 40 times. And I think that's their game plan coming in. They're going to line up. I know that they like to run two receiver, one tight end person, or two running back, one tight end personnel. They like to put that fullback out there. I was really hoping you were going to say James Devlin was their top offensive weapon when we went with James. Unfortunately, you went with White there, but James Devlin. They like to get in a heavy set, or at least what's considered a heavy set in today's NFL. And unfortunately, that is the Chiefs' worst run defensive personnel when they're going up against two running backs and one tight end. Stat courtesy of Barley Hop, Craig Stout, our guy over at Arrowhead Pride. So I think that is their path to victory. They're going to look to dump the ball off, and they're going to look to run the ball tons and tons of times. So what should the Chiefs defense do? Well, I would make Tom Brady, I would force him to throw it deep. I would force him to throw the ball outside to Chris Hogan and Philip Dorsett. And I would maybe mix in some zone looks and drop a defender down to man up on James White, so you take away those 8 free easy yards that they like to pick up so much. And that's kind of how I look at the Patriots offense versus the Colts, or versus the Chiefs defense. I think they come out and really, really try to establish the run. Not unlike they did in that Week 6 game, when I went back and rewatched it, and they ran the ball a whole lot more than I remembered. And I think that's their game plan coming in on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in that game in Week 6, a lot of it was Sony Michel. He really set the tone for them. And he and James White are completely different skill sets, and I can see the Patriots trying to use both of them. When you said 21 personnel, I wasn't even thinking of James Devlin. I was thinking about having Michel and James White on the field at the same time. And I don't know if the Patriots do that all that often, but here's the thing. The Chiefs this week,
what's up?
R.I.P. Captain Ron. Sorry, buddy.
Which is a Sorry, good sign Ron. For Eric Berry. I do think that is a good sign that Eric Berry might try to go in this game. Because I don't think, I mean, I assume Ron Parker was active last game, correct?
Actually, I think he was in
it. Oh, really? Okay. Well, there goes my theory. Never mind. Erase that last 30 seconds.
Yeah, we'll edit that out. But here's the thing. The reason that I mentioned that, like, I know Jordan Lucas played a lot in the last game against the Patriots. I mean, people have been going over and looking at the fact that Dorian O'Daniel hadn't played yet. Justin Houston was out that game. We obviously didn't have Eric Berry. Here's the thing for me. If you're not scared about the Patriots outside, if you're really basically just not scared of anyone except for Edelman running crossers, you know, the occasional maybe throw to Gronk, but basically what you're fearful of is the Patriots trying to chew you up like 8 yards at a time, then that means that the Chiefs are going to be playing single high safety. They're going to have one guy back there. They're going to be able to drop an extra player into the box. And I don't know who that is. I don't know what assignments they're going to try to use. But let's also keep in mind, no matter how you feel about him, Eric Murray wasn't active for the game against the Patriots. Josh Shaw, a guy that was only on the team for like 4 weeks this year, ended up playing like a third of the defensive snaps and gave up that last completion to Gronkowski that sealed the game for the Patriots. And with that being said, I think it's important for us to just look at the fact that the Chiefs are going to have defensively a better complement of players to be able to match up with this Patriots team. And I think that the Chiefs can assume that the Patriots are going to be attacking them between the line of scrimmage and about 10 yards downfield. And that means that that defense has got to take some pride in the jobs that they do and step up and play the football game. And I heard when we went to dinner with the Santos on Sunday night, I heard Gabriel and Benjamin saying that the Chiefs were apparently pulling Chris Jones off the field on obvious running situations. And I don't know what the subs were. I did see that basically like not really most of the Chiefs defensive starters, especially guys in the front seven, they were all playing like, you know, half of the defensive snaps. They rotated in Breland Speaks for 20 something plays on that Saturday game against the Colts somehow. Well, I'm looking at it thinking, look, you know, we initially were talking about wanting to see Derek Nnadi and Xavier Williams on the field at the same time, like take these run stuffers and put them out there. Well, I think the Chiefs are going to have opportunities to be able to like run blitz, to be able to stack the box and put as much talent as they can on the field that's going to be able to go out and try to pop Sonny Michel and not let the Patriots run the ball effectively. And if the Patriots are able to, you know, move out of that because they have James White and he can run these short little routes, well, then they've got a bunch of guys that hopefully inside of a zone are going to be able to wrap up and tackle. I mean, I think that may be the biggest thing this game is that if the Chiefs end up playing a zone because they're expecting a lot of this short stuff between basically 0 to 10 yards, it's going to be about if passes are completed, whether it's Edelman or White or Gronk or whoever, that the Chiefs are going to have sound tackling and not let, you know, a 7 yard play turn into a 20 yard play.
Because that might be the only way that the Patriots could get big plays in the game. I mean, it's just, you just don't see the talent outside that scares you whatsoever. And I bet they throw a couple downfield if they get like a one-on-one look, but I don't even know if they're hoping to complete it. I think they're just hoping to show it, just hoping to keep the Chiefs defense back on their heels a little bit, like, oh, hey, they could throw deep here. But I think everything the Patriots want to do is underneath. And again, this is a strategy. It's not unlike the Colts, really, like what they wanted to do. And this kind of stuff works if you have control of the game, if you have a lead in the game, and if you're, you know, controlling the pace. The Colts' control of the pace completely went out the window at 14-0, at 17-0. They couldn't just dink and dunk all the way down the field. They couldn't do that. There's not enough time. Mahomes is going to keep scoring. Like, that's just not it. That may have worked against Chiefs teams of old. It ain't going to work anymore. And so, you know, once again, the beginning of this game, I think for the Patriots to win this game, they either have to be something fluky, like they're going to have to, you know, win the turnover battle by a couple. There's going to have to be some sort of special teams, big play or something like that. Or they're going to have to completely control the pace of the game. And that happens with running the ball 40 times and just playing. I don't know if they play slow necessarily, because I think they're confident to do that over and over and over, kind of like the week 6 game. But I think they're gonna have to, you know, play small ball like that, kind of like Chiefs teams of old. It's odd how the tables have turned here, and we have teams that want to play small ball against the Chiefs now, when the Chiefs have done that for years with Alex Smith, and now they got Mahomes and everything. The team that's just gonna, they're gonna light you up, and if they jump on you early, like, good luck keeping up. You're gonna have to keep up with them. So I think those are their paths to victory. I would warn everybody a little bit in looking at like the week six game too much, and who is and wasn't playing, just because so much changes. I mean, my example here is the Saints just beat the Eagles 48-7, you know, later than the week six game of the Chiefs Patriots. And then that they come out in this game and Eagles get up 14-0, only lose 20-14, but it's, you know, a game throughout, obviously the game they could have stolen at the end, but just so much changes in game to game that it's just, I don't take too much that we learn from that week six game and apply that to this game, just because the Patriots are going to, you know, they're going to have a new strategy. I think they're going to be doing all things new. It's just going to be a different ballgame.
Well, and if you look at it too, like, I mean, I went through and was just kind of reviewing some statistical anomalies that I felt like happened in that game in week six. And I mean, so here's a couple things for you. You mentioned Gronk, like that it looks like he's pretty much done. So Gronk finished that game with 3 catches for 97 yards. He was targeted a 4th time, and that was the Josh Shaw play where they ended up throwing a penalty for pass interference. Well, Gronk only had 3 catches or more and or 97 yards or more one more time in the final 8 weeks of the season, and it was in that game against Miami that they lost on the pitch play. You know, we look at the fact that in that game, one of the things that I think like really screwed the Chiefs was in the red zone. This season, the Chiefs finished 1st in red zone scoring and 2nd in red zone touchdown efficiency. The Patriots were 13th and 15th in those categories, basically middle of the pack. Well, in that game in week 6, the Chiefs get to the red zone 5 times and they scored 20 points. The Patriots got there 6 times and they scored 34. I mean, we know that the NFL is random, and we know that you can't count on a lot of things week to week. I think the big thing that really stood out to everybody was the fact that in that week 6 game, the Patriots not only didn't punt, they weren't flagged for a single penalty. And when you have all the different things that you look at with the Patriots, and you know, whether it's Deflategate or Spygate or all these different gates, there was actually a great article from The Ringer that I tweeted out earlier this week that was written in January of last year talking about these weird statistical anomalies related to penalties with the Patriots. So I did like a little kind of miniature penalty deep dive, trying to figure out like, how often does it happen that a team goes through an entire game and doesn't get penalized? In 2018, it happened once, the Patriots. In 2017, it didn't happen at all. In 2016, it happened one time in week 17, and it was Bills Jets. I'm sure that those refs just didn't want to throw any flags and they wanted to get the hell out of there and go on vacation. I mean, I'm looking at this thinking like, okay, so, and then I even looked at like, how many times does it happen in a game that they only throw one penalty flag on a team? And it happens about 7 times a year on average over the last 4 years. Like, it's extremely rare for this to happen. And so like you imagine that that's going to change, and you would hope, whether Dirk is out there to give a quick little shoulder massage to who is it? Did we get Cleet? Isn't that our guy?
Yeah, Cleet Blake. I think he's a Nebraska boy.
The guy that that called Chiefs Rams in L.A. the like lead ref of the All Star crew. You know, you're hoping that maybe we can send him a care package. Let him know, like, you know, listen, man, a little home cooking. Somebody want to take him some Q39. Or some Oklahoma Joes?
You just gotta. Just let Uncle Dirk on the field here, man. I got a thing with these refs. I got a thing. You should have seen the way they were looking at me, man. You should have seen the way. Oddly enough, I watched Chiefs Patriots Week 6 last night, and the ref was the ref that I talked to before the Colts game. It was the same ref in that game that didn't throw a flag on the Patriots, that threw many flags on the Colts. Do you wonder why? Do you know why he threw so many flags in the Colts? I mean, you should have seen the sparkle in his eye. I wowed him.
Maybe it was the Mahomes wig that you pulled out, right? He was like, look at this goofball.
Goofball in a red hat.
This guy is drunk, and there he goes.
One thing I want to touch on with Tom Brady, remember we were seeing those weird stats all season long where he was the least blitz quarterback in the NFL while also being the worst quarterback in the NFL against the blitz. And it's kind of been known throughout the years that, like, you shouldn't blitz Brady because he just kills it. So it's kind of weird to see these stats all season where he was the worst quarterback in the league against the blitz while also still being the least blitzed. I do kind of appreciate the theory laid out by one Bill Simmons that, you know, at this point in his career, Brady ain't here for taking hits in the regular season. But he's, you know, we'll stick it, stand in the pocket and take hits. And we'll see. That's a huge key to the game. Cause if he's just at the point of his career where, he's throwing the ball away before he's getting hit, they're just not going to be able to make enough plays in the game. If that's his thinking. I think last week he only got hit one time. So I think Bill was kind of making it like he stood in there and took hits last week against the Chargers. I don't think that was really the deal at all. I think the Chargers never really got to him. I think there was people wide open all over the field. So I think they won strategically in that game and not really through Brady, standing in there and taking hits. But I think that will be something to watch is just Brady, you know, he's played in these cold weather games. It won't affect him like Andrew Luck or anything. But it's still going to be 10 degrees, and he's still 41 years old. So what's his willingness to stand in there and take a big hit before making a throw this week? And I think that will be a big sign for this game on Sunday.
Yeah, and I mean, if you guys listen to Bill Simmons, if you don't, then I get it, you know. But, like, this guy is, like, the Patriots fan, right? And he talks about the Patriots all year long. So even if you're not watching them, if you're listening to the podcast, you at least have like one fan's perspective on the way that that team is. And he was just talking this week about how he thinks the last few years Brady has basically just been like, just get me to January without getting hit. I just don't want to get hit during the season. Get me to January and then I'll step up in the pocket and take what I have to. And I mean, like I said earlier, that's the way that you beat Brady. You hit him. You got to hit him. And I know that the Patriots have a guy named Shaq Mason that plays guard for them. He's a guy that came out of that wild offense at Georgia Tech, and he was really undersized, and so he ended up being like a 6th-round pick. But he's been fantastic. The guy's been, I think, an all-pro multiple times since the Patriots drafted him. But outside of that, I think they're playing their third left tackle this season. I mean, he's played most of the year because Isaiah Wynn got hurt, but, you know, they lost Nate Solder in the offseason. This is not a great offensive line for the Patriots. Mm. A lot of it is about Tom Brady getting rid of the ball. And many of that is because of, you know, they're running short routes and he's dumping the ball off to James White. But generally speaking, I really don't think that he has, you know, great protection. Now, the Colts had great protection all season long, and the Chiefs were able to do that. And so it's not like stranger things haven't happened, that the Chiefs have the best pass rush in the NFL and New England has poor pass protection. And that doesn't just mean that the Chiefs are going to be able to hit Brady. But, I mean, I just think that there are a lot of reasons that you should be able to point to statistically and be really confident about what the Chiefs are going to be able to do against the Patriots. And one of them that I think is a little bit weird, and some of this probably has to do with the fact that the Patriots always end up with home field advantage in the AFC because the AFC East is an absolute embarrassment and has been for the last 20 years. But the Patriots haven't won a road playoff game since 2007. Now, they probably haven't had to play very
much. I think they've only played one.
But there you go.
So, I think it was at Denver, and I think that was it.
Right? But, insane. I mean, you look at some of these things, and there's a few stats as far as the Chiefs are concerned that have really blown me away this week. Longest active streaks of games without allowing 30 or more at home. The Chiefs have more than twice as many as second place. 34 straight games at Arrowhead without allowing 30 or more. I mean, that right there is unbelievable. In 2018, most pressures generated at home. The Chiefs first with 118. Like, this Chiefs defense, I think that they're going to be able to do a lot of really good things against the Patriots. Best home point differential in the NFL since the start of 2013. The Chiefs are third behind the Patriots and the Seahawks. Like, it's a different team at home. And I think, honestly, when you think about all of the fan angst that has existed for this franchise, everything that has led up to arriving at having a 23-year-old MVP quarterback, getting to have the number one seed in the playoffs, hosting the AFC Championship game. If you want to start pulling into the things in the micro and getting a different hype video from the Chiefs every day for the past 2 weeks, getting this stupid bet against us crap from Julian Edelman, or like you mentioned, national guys like Colin Cowherd and Bill Simmons saying that the Chiefs fans somehow aren't even going to be loud because it's going to be cold. Like, there's so much that the fans are going to be able to do. And I think that, honestly, especially just after getting the home playoff losing streak off of our backs and getting the Colts as a specific nemesis off of our backs last week, I said in last week's show that if the Chiefs beat the Colts, they're going to the Super Bowl. And I am like, that's where I'm at. That's how I feel. I don't care that it's the Patriots. It wouldn't have mattered if it's the Chargers. The game last week was the game that I felt the Chiefs had to win in order to like really have a shot. And that this week, you know, you mentioned that you thought it was going to be an offensive explosion. I don't know like that the Chiefs, I don't know ultimately how the game is going to turn out. It's probably going to be way closer than I want it to be, but I'm extremely confident that the Chiefs are going to come out and beat the Patriots and head to Atlanta for the Super Bowl.
All right, then. All right, sir. Good day, sir. I do want to give a quick shout out, talking about going to the game. We got some new friends over at Tickets for Less. How about a shout out to them? I pretty much buy my tickets through them every time because they're cheaper than SeatGeek and StubHub. And that's, you know, that's all you could really ask for, is that they're cheaper than everybody else. So if you want the cheapest tickets available, do Tickets for Less. Quick shout out to them. A few players that I'm watching on the defense. How about, you mentioned Anthony Hitchens. It's a tough game for him. They're going to run 40 times, so he definitely plays a factor there. Late in that game, like on the biggest drives, something that the Patriots were doing, they would send James White out of the backfield, and if it was Hitchens following him, if it was Hitchens in coverage, they would just immediately dump to him. Like, not even let him get to the line of scrimmage. It's almost just like a sweep play. And they just let James White work one-on-one against Anthony Hitchens, and they gained like 10 yards on both of those plays. It was just, he just can't move laterally the same way James White can. It just kind of embarrassed him in the open field. So it'll be interesting to see how they use Anthony Hitchens. You want to do everything you can to keep him out of coverage, but then it kind of becomes, you know, if Dorian O'Daniel isn't playing, that's who you'd like to be covering, James White, who does cover him. So if you're in man coverage, you don't want Ragland, you don't want Hitchens. You're looking, I kind of think Eric Murray might be the guy. He might be the best matchup athletically. So someone to keep an eye on there. How about Kendall Fuller? I think there's a good amount of pressure on him. He'll be in the slot. He'll be covering Julian Edelman, who's their top weapon as a wideout. You know, this is why we got Kendall Fuller, is for a game like this. And I thought he did a decent job against Julian Edelman, even though he gave up a touchdown that was pretty bad. But overall, he did a pretty decent job against Julian Edelman. I mean, this is his chance to go out, make a name for himself, make a lot of money. So Kendall Fuller, Anthony Hitchens, Eric Murray, some players I'm keeping my eyes on defensively.
If I may, go ahead, yeah. can I give some defensive guys that I want to keep my eye on? All right. So you mentioned Kendall Fuller, Anthony Hitchens, and Eric Murray. I'm going to offer an alternative to Eric Murray as far as trying to cover the running back coming out of the backfield. And listen, this is not like in-depth analysis. I don't know if it's even like the right guy for it. But honestly, I want to see Sorensen do it, man. I think that Sorensen is a better tackler than a guy like Eric Murray. And frankly, I just love the attitude that Sorensen brings. I mean, they call this guy Dirty Dan, all right? And I would love to see Sorensen get chippy and get nasty and get in the head of a guy like James White. I don't know if James White has ever even had somebody try to come at him the way that Sorensen will, but I would love to just try to be playing mental games and physical games with a guy like James White. And I know that maybe based simply upon skin color, some people are going to say that Sorensen would be a terrible matchup. There are also people that just frankly don't like the fact that Daniel Sorensen makes a ton of money. They don't think that he's all that great, but I really like that idea. I think that Sorensen is a very useful player when he's used the right way. And I don't know if using him against James White is correct, but that's something that I want to see. And another guy, I know that you mentioned Kendall Fuller. I'm going to go to another guy at that same position and say Charvarius Ward. This guy has been absolutely fantastic since they inserted him in the lineup. And yes, I will include the Seahawks game. I thought that he was fantastic as a first-time starter on the road on Sunday Night Football in the second loudest stadium in the world. And the only plays where he really got beat were some of the most exceptional throws that Russell Wilson has had the entire season. And when you look at him having four pass deflections against the Colts, and granted, he's covering a guy like Chester Rogers probably, but like Charvarius Ward is going to be bodied up against Chris Hogan probably. I mean, I don't know if they're going to, you know, if Bill Belichick really wants to try to, you know, find the right matchups. Maybe he tries to isolate Philip Dorsett over there or something. But as we've joked about, the Patriots don't have a whole lot on the outside. And I think that you're going to see an opportunity for Charvarius Ward to have another really exceptional game where even if the Patriots are trying to test him, I don't think that there's a guy on that Patriots offense that is a bad matchup for Charvarius Ward. And that's really exciting. Now, the last guy that I'm going to be keeping my eyes on that I think can have probably the biggest impact on this game as a Chiefs defender, listen, man, it's got to be Justin Houston. Because I think that what Dee Ford has done this year has created a reputation for himself that he's the guy that is constantly getting chipped. He's the one that's getting the tight end or the running back that's going to his side because people are terrified of his ability to turn the corner. They mentioned that that sack, the strip sack of Andrew Luck, was the fastest sack of an edge player in the NFL this season. In the cold, in the playoffs, Dee Ford showing up like that. But Justin Houston, what that means is that he gets less attention. And frankly, for the first time in a long time, if you want evidence that it feels like the curse of the Kansas City Chiefs has been broken, you're seeing a guy like Justin Houston playing his best football when it actually matters. How many times have we gotten to the playoffs and we're missing guys like Justin Houston or Tamba Ali, and it ends up being the one thing that we're good at, suddenly we can't do. We never get to have our best players when it matters most. And I think that Justin Houston, as a vocal leader, as a guy that has been steady and has really helped this defense, trying to get them to be focused, a guy that is a veteran on this team, I have given Justin Houston a lot of shit. I own it because I don't think that Justin Houston is worth 20 some odd million dollars. He's just not. I still don't know if Justin Houston is even going to be on this team next season, but I think that Justin Houston can come out and show the young guys on this team and the new guys on this team and, frankly, the New England Patriots and the entire United States watching this football game that that man ain't done, and I want to see it.
Man, on Charvarius Ward, I do think it's awesome that we saved our Marcus Cooper for the playoffs this season. Another sign that things are turning for the Chiefs. Like, hey, let's not waste Marcus Cooper in the middle of the season this year. Let's save him for the playoffs. So I thought that was kind of brilliant. And really, Andy Reid took a lot of shit for that, for the moves he made before the Seahawks game, where he, you know, it's a game that really didn't mean that much in the end. And he took a chance on some young players and saw how that changed the defense. And a lot of people complain that like this wasn't the time of the year to do it. Well, guess what? Both Charvarius Ward and Jordan Lucas are now big time contributors for this defense, and that decision paid off big time. Just to get a look at them and, you know, change things up, and which was absolutely necessary. I didn't get the criticism after that game for trying out those young guys in a game that we could lose and still maintain home field advantage, which is exactly what happened. So Andy Reid deserves a lot of credit for that. Took some flack, or that was totally ridiculous. And then we're kind of nearing the end here. We haven't talked too much about my guy. Maybe we have, but I haven't talked about him enough because I can never talk about him enough. But Andy Reid in this game, man, this is a legacy game for Andy Reid. Going up against Bill Belichick. A win over Bill Belichick and the Patriots. He's 0-2 against Belichick at this point. But, you know, really been outmatched in both of the games with the Eagles Super Bowl. They weren't as good as the Patriots that year. They kind of hung around or whatever. The 2015 game in New England, we weren't as good as the Patriots. We were beat up. I think he was really – he just didn't have the teams to match up against Belichick. And of course, the stat that's floating around everywhere this week, Bill Belichick's allowed 40 points only 7 times in his career as a head coach. 3 of those – are from Andy Reid and this Chiefs team, like Andy Reid since he's been with the Chiefs. So Andy has had great success against Bill Belichick. You know, it's just when you're looking at his legacy in the end, give him this win over Belichick, give him a second Super Bowl appearance, give him this overall success against Bill Belichick, like at least make the argument like, hey, Andy Reid's one coach that's kind of stood up to Bill Belichick in his era. Even though, you know, the record's probably a little lopsided, but still, look at this offensive success, and, you know, here's a playoff win and whatnot. So I think it's just so much for Andy Reid to gain, and everybody knows by this time that I want the Chiefs to win for Andy Reid so bad. I just think he deserves it. I want him to earn the recognition that's coming his way. I've said this over and over, but, you know, it really comes to a head at a time like this. And this week, it's about Andy Reid. Go out there, beat Bill Belichick, take it to him. You know, get yourself a Super Bowl, and let's go. I am ready. I am ready.
All right. Well, I hope everybody else is ready for Week 19 of Sammy Watch.
Oh God. Oh boy. Oh buddy.
Kins, Sammy Watchkins. Here we are, Sammy Watch, finally back. Finally back after this long-standing foot injury that he's been trying to get over. And boy, does Sammy look good. He had that long play with like the Euro step and allowed Damian Williams to get a nice downfield block. He had that one-handed catch that everybody was like, oh man, especially in the cold with the rocket arm of Patrick Mahomes looking sharp. I saw after one catch that Tyreek had, and he finished it strong, that Sammy picks him up off the ground and is hyping him up, and I'm seeing, oh, man, I don't have to be body language doctor after that one. Sammy is looking fresh and looking excited, and I'm going to end it with this Week 19 of Sammy Watch from at Graham Barfield of the NFL Network. Sammy Watkins has now played 10 full games with the Chiefs. In these contests, he's averaging 5 catches, career high, 64 yards, second most in his career, 73% catch rate, career high, 120 passer rating when targeted, second best in his career, and 80% of his targets have been catchable, which is a career high, all of these stats according to Pro Football Focus. So what that means to me, folks, is Sammy Watkins, as we've mentioned, he matters. He changes what this offense can do. And we did have Sammy Watkins in that first game against the Patriots, but Mahomes started out a little slow and the Chiefs still put up, what, 41 or something? I am really excited to see Sammy Watkins back. And I thought maybe the best thing was that when you get Andy Reid talking on Sunday or Monday, they ask him about Sammy and he said, you know what, his body's sore because he played a football game, but the foot feels good and he's ready to go. The only player for the Chiefs not practicing right now, Dorian O'Daniel, including the guy that replaced Ron Parker on the roster, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. Is Tardif going to play on Sunday night? What do you think? you know, put him in for Andrew Wiley, or is he just like emergency only?
Man, I don't know. It's a tough call. I mean, obviously it depends on like what kind of percent he's at. But if he's 100%, I guess, I mean, it's tough to throw him in there at a spot like that, but he's a better player. I don't know. That's a tough call. I think he does not start.
I would probably keep Andrew Wiley out there. We named him our rookie of the year. Like, I just let the guy stick it out. And, you know, if you feel like Tardif is really ready to go, maybe, you know, but like, God, man, it's going to be so cold. Like, I don't think it's really good for, you know, his, but honestly, I don't even think it's really good for Eric Berry's body. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure what to expect from the guys that have been dealing with injuries for most of the season. You know, trying to put them out there in the AFC Championship game. We'll see. The last thing that I've got today, Dirk, is a question that I asked on Twitter and got a host of some good, some weird responses. You know, shout out to our audience, I guess. Who bangs the drum at the AFC Championship game? And this has now become a question that I feel like I'm seeing from accounts much bigger than mine. People are now in on who is going to bang the drum at the AFC Championship game. It seems like an important question now.
Me?
There were a lot of listeners with that same response.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
pick me.
I deserve it. Me. I've seen some Joe Montana thrown out more than anybody, I think, because he's been confirmed that he's going to be there, I guess. How about Hussein Abdullah? I know he's going to be in the house. I liked your suggestions of Derek Johnson or Tamba Hali.
I love the idea of Tamba doing
that's,
it.
Like, that's pretty good.
I mean, he and DJ both, like, and I saw people saying, like, Jamal would be a good option too. And then other people saying, you know, Derek Johnson played for the Raiders this year. And Jamal Charles was playing for the Broncos. Like, we just can't do that. And it's like, okay, I'm trying to imagine who can come out and get introduced to the crowd and you're going to get the biggest reaction. The first guy that I wanted to say, if any of you know me at all, you know the answer. It's Marty Schottenheimer. But I don't think that Marty is in a place mentally and physically where you can ask him to do that. I don't think that you can. And, you know, whether that means like still trying to get Marty to come to the game and like, what about Pat Schottenheimer? I mean, I've got strong feelings about Marty's wife, especially after seeing the special that they did talking about him having Alzheimer's and battling it and seeing her just stand by your man. It touched my heart.
How about Dick Vermeil?
Dick Vermeil would be cool. Honestly, the suggestion that I saw the most, and like, I don't know if this is the type of guy that's going to really fire the crowd up, but they said Lynn Dawson a lot.
That makes sense.
And that would make a lot of sense. I just, like, I really don't know. You know, people were saying like a celebrity maybe, but like, I don't need to see, you know, Rob Riggle bang the drum at the AFC Championship. Nope. Like, I really think that, like, if you want to do right by somebody and you really want to try to, I would say, do right by the stadium and by the fans, what I think I came to, honestly, is I want to see Clark Hunt do it. I'm serious, man. Like, if you could have Clark Hunt or, like, the Hunt family, you know, I don't know if Lamar's wife is still alive, like, something like that to really just, you know, this is about the Lamar Hunt trophy. This is the first time that that trophy has ever been inside of this stadium since it was named the Lamar Hunt AFC Champion Trophy. I mean, that family is a cornerstone of what the NFL is today. And I really do think that Clark has worked really hard to build what the Chiefs have right now. And we've had a lot of questions about him, and there might be questions about him in the future. But I kind of think he deserves it, man. And I don't think that he doesn't seem like the type of guy that wants to go out and do something like that. He's very quietly a face of this franchise, but doesn't want to be in the public eye that often. But I think that if people saw him, especially a guy that is so cold and calculating and zipped up all the time, if Clark went out there and like got red faced and excited and screaming about it. Like, give me the Mark Cuban version of Lamar or Clark Hunt going out there to bang the drum. Like, can you imagine what that would do to the crowd?
I love it. I love it. The one other name that popped in my head, Derek Thomas's son, maybe possibly. Yeah. But I do, I mean, I would lean towards like somebody, not necessarily a family member, just because I just want, you know, they take the pictures and everything, and it's just kind of iconic of who it is, and it's just kind of, well, who's that? And then you have to explain Derek Thomas's son. But it is an interesting choice. I could see Montana. I'm going to put my money on Lenny Dawson.
Yeah, I think that's a really solid choice too. I can't like the reason that I initially thought Derek Johnson or Tamba Ali is because it's just like these are guys that just fought so long in this uniform to try to get to this place, and them and the teams that they were on probably more so than them just ended up coming up a little short.
And they're the most recognizable names to like the crowd right now. Like nothing would get them more fired up than seeing either Tamba Ali or Derek Johnson out there doing it. I love it. I love it. Tamba Ali, give it to me. Yeah. And plus he banged the shit out of that drum. He's a music guy anyways. He'd probably break into one of his songs.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I'm a chief. I think that's what it's called. I don't know. All right, folks. Well,
I don't know if I gave a score. I'm going to go with I think we see a pretty epic game. I think it was a disappointing divisional weekend. I think, you know, you see a few epic games at least every NFL playoffs. I really don't think we have one yet. So I'd look at one of these two games on Sunday to be a magical game. And shit, why not us? So I'm going to say it's really back and forth all game. People are tweeting about how great this fucking game is. It's old school versus new school and all this. And I think the Chiefs come away victorious in the end in dramatic fashion. And I will say it's 33-28
Chiefs. 33-28 Chiefs. I'm just going to give you a score. The Chiefs have scored 26 points in every game this season, and I don't see that changing. But I mean, there's been a lot of talk about is the cold going to affect the game, and is it, you know, whether it's the noise or the score or anything. I think the cold is going to have an impact, and it's going to end up being maybe a little bit lower scoring than people are expecting. I think that the over-under has been bedded down to around 54. And I think the Chiefs are going to end up winning 27-24 with a last-minute, last-second, whatever, field goal from Harrison Butker to really put the Chiefs in a pretty confident place about kicking it home in Arrowhead Stadium in the playoffs. This has been Amateur Hour, folks. I'm Ryan Scott, all he says Dirkness. And if you couldn't tell, this is ELO with a showdown. Just for you, Dirk.
Oh, man, you know me. You know me.
I do.
I love it.
I do.
So it's interesting. After the game last week, you were on Chiefs Big. You've come off Chiefs Big.
I mean, whatever. We're in the moment right now. I'm sure that, but, you know, honestly, give me 3 hours and I'm going to be tweeting out how the Chiefs are going to win by a million.
Yeah, that's the hard thing. It's really hard to predict the game like four days out or whatever we are right now. It's just don't have a feel for it. Even though I crushed my prediction last week, sans the Demetrius Harris breakout playoff game. That did not come to fruition, but I tweeted very late in the night, 14-0 at about the 9-minute mark, and it took until about the 8-minute mark.
I mean, I already feel bad about 27-24, honestly. I'm like, man, the Chiefs are only scoring they're only scoring 27? I don't know about that. I think they're probably going to put up 30-something. I don't know. The Chiefs are awesome. We're going to win.
Let's go. Chiefs!